first things first, it is a beautiful Monday morning here in New York City. I am Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer, Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. You guys have a great weekend?
Absolutely. It was wonderful. Your hair looks lovely, Jenna Wolf.
Thank you. So does yours, Nick Wright, as it always does. We got a possible new destination for Dez Bryant. Tom Brady lost another target, and big players are making big money. That's where we start this morning. Really, really good money, reportedly going to a really, really good defensive tackle. Aaron Donald and the Rams closing in on a much-anticipated deal that would end his holdout and finally get him into camp. According to reports, the deal would make him the highest-paid defensive player in the history of the NFL. Aaron Donald is the reigning defensive player of the year. Chris Carter, if Aaron Donald is there, are the Rams primed for a Super Bowl run this coming season?
The Rams have a good football team. They really do have a good football team. They have to sign Aaron Donald. You don't go out in free agency and then sign Ndamukong Suh and allow Aaron Donald just to play with his the last year of his contract. You have to sign him. He is what we thought J.J. Watt was 3 or 4 years ago. And if J.J. Watt was at this stage, what would we be saying about him?
When Aaron, he was at this stage,
yes,
he got this money.
Absolutely. So Aaron Donald, he should get paid. He is a game changer. Does it mean, like, we haven't seen that when you sign guys to this deal that it automatically means that you're going to be Super Bowl champions? Because we've just seen teams that have gone about it a different way. But the Rams have put together a team. I don't know how long they can stay together. But right now they have a window that, yes, they are a Super Bowl contender. If their quarterback continues to grow and get better, I believe that their offensive head coach, who's offensive-minded, and Sean McVay will continue to create big plays and good offensive continuity for that team. But if they're going to win the Super Bowl, Aaron Donald's going to be a key part of that because, let's look, we always talk about here getting ready for the 2018 season. The NFC is dominant as far as quarterbacks and as far as defensive fronts. Now, the Rams, they have big names, but they haven't been as dominant as Philadelphia, Minnesota, and some other defenses that we've seen. Haven't been necessarily as good against the run. So Aaron Donald, we talk a lot about him, his sack total, but he needs to get a little better against the run, too, because the Rams last year, not very good. And it's hard to pay one guy that kind of money, Nick, in them to be a suspect run defense.
I think a lot of that has to do with the one true weakness of their team, which is their linebacking core. Like, especially, okay, they've 3-4 front, so it's going to be hard for Donald. He has to occupy the offensive linemen so the linebackers can run free and make those plays. And you go offensive line, pass catchers, running back, quarterback, D-line, linebacker, secondary. This team is, I would say, top 8, top 10 in the league in every single category, except for linebackers, where they might be bottom 5. But to answer the question, yes, the Rams are Super Bowl contenders with Aaron Donald there. Their offseason would have made, to me, no sense if they didn't have money allocated to get this done. You don't make the moves they made to win right now
and then
say,
have enough money,
and our best player might not show up because we can't pay him. Right. I mean, even it wasn't just they gave that they.
You mean Brandon Cook? You mean.
Right. You trade for Brandon Cooks. You take what would have been a cheap, cost-controlled 23rd overall pick of the draft and trade for top of the market wide receiver salary. You bring in Ndamukong Suh. You trade for now Marcus Peters. You didn't have to give him money yet, but you bring in Marcus Peters.
But it's an explosive situation.
Right, especially when you pair it with Talib. You give Gurley money 2 years before you even would have to franchise him. Like, potentially, you gave him money 3, maybe 4 years early. You also give, Haverstein, your right tackle money. You gave everybody money. And they said, we heard it. We've been talking to Aaron. It's very different than Khalil Mack's situation. Khalil Mack and the Raiders have not negotiated on money since February. What did we hear about the Rams all offseason? We're talking. It's a good relationship. Aaron knows where we are.
And all those other signs that you're talking about as far as the activity of the general manager.
Yes.
Like, what are they going to do? Leave Aaron Donald hanging?
We saw last week, we're in the same zip code. And Chris said, well, let's get on the same block first.
Yes.
Now it seems like they are next door neighbors. And they're
that has to do with the guarantees.
Absolutely. And I think they're about to have this done. And so I look at the NFC. You're right about the NFC being stacked. But I look at the NFC West. oddly enough, it's amazing how quickly things change. Seattle, I think, will be competing for a wild card spot. San Francisco's best case scenario is competing for a wild card spot. Arizona's about to change quarterbacks probably midseason. Like, mm-hmm. they are positioned to win their division, which gets them at least one home playoff game. And they are positioned, if Jared Goff can continue to improve, to absolutely be one of the favorites in the NFC.
What I just want to ask about Khalil Mack, because he did mention that. What do you think this deal means for what happens with him? Does it influence in any way? Does the money, the number, the fact that he hold out mean he's going to probably end up making more? How does this affect that situation?
It affects it because the amount of guarantees, because he's going to get a certain percentage of the guarantees that Aaron Donald did get. So it's going to set a ceiling as far as the average per year, because Aaron Donald's going to be the highest paid defensive player in the history of the game. So there's the guarantees there. There's the average dollar per year. And I believe, especially in this last week of preseason, we'll see more action for Khalil Mack than we've seen in during the first 5 weeks of training camp, because teams know getting ready for the season, and they know that the Raiders, there's a deal to be made for the Raiders. So I wouldn't be surprised if a couple other teams got in the Khalil Mack action this week.
The other thing you both mentioned was this is going to sort of go as Jared Goff goes. I mean, how much is it going to depend on how much he can improve and how much better he and how much stronger of a quarterback he can be?
If Goff can statistically duplicate what he did last year, that's good enough. My worry about Goff is not that he, and maybe I misstated it earlier, not that he has to get better, but to prevent a regression. This team
yes.
did lead the NFL in points last year. Their problem was the linebackers, as I mentioned, and one thing they haven't fixed, which is pressure off the edge. One of the ways they made room for these guys, a guy like Robert Quinn's gone. He was one of their few edge pressure guys. They are not great. They generate their pressure up the middle, and now they have corners to help. But, like, I mean, they scored the most points in the league. Jared Goff and Todd Gurley, of course, were the big parts of that. If he can maintain where he was, I think it was 28 touchdowns, 7 picks, 100 quarterback rating last year. That's good enough. My worry about Goff is a year 3 Marcus Mariota-style regression, and that's what could really hurt them.
Yeah, this team and this franchise, they have to continue to grow, to learn how to win together. Last year, getting in double digits for this unit, that is their first time, this group. The coach, the wide receivers, the quarterback, the running back, all them getting double digits. But when you start projecting out Super Bowl, I start looking at home field advantage. I start looking at bi-coastal. Right now, Super Bowl champs, best and the most talented team, Philadelphia. They play in a cold climate. So Jared Goff, can he go to Green Bay? Can he go to Philadelphia and win a playoff game? If not, they need to get the 12 wins. Imagine the excitement of hosting the NFC. Everything ran through L.A. So I believe that there's still some growth for this franchise and for that quarterback. But when it comes down to it, your quarterback's got to be able to wheel and deal in them big games. That's why there will always continue to be pressure on Jared.
And this is how close they were last year, by the way. The game Carson Wentz got his knee blown up was an Eagles-Rams game in Los Angeles that the Eagles ended up winning. I think they won by 2 scores, but it was close throughout late. The Eagles yes. added a score late. If the Rams can finish that game, if they can beat the Eagles once Wentz goes out, they have 12 wins. They have the tiebreaker with Philly. Then last year, the home field goes through Los Angeles. We're talking about something entirely different. That's the other reason why it is critical to get this done, is if Aaron Donald was going to potentially miss a game or not show up to the last minute like he did last year, to where he wasn't ready to play the first game.
Right.
Listen, they play Oakland on Monday Night Football week 1. That's in Oakland. You could lose that game, and that could be the difference between not necessarily winning your division and not, but getting home field through L.A., warm climate, and having to go to Philly, having to go somewhere else.
Football sliding doors. Just quickly, are you worried that he missed camp coming in?
Not because of the success last year, all right?
Okay.
He's got a history of doing it. He's a hard worker. The guy has 0 negative marks about him. Great team guy. Aaron Donald, when they get the paperwork right, he will show up and be ready to go to work.
All right, we're going to take a break. Talk much more about this. Eric Mangini will join us a little bit later in the program. But coming up on the other side, why did Dez Bryant pass on the Browns? We now know. That's next on First Things First. We're going to get to Dez Bryant in just a second, but first, Bengals wide receiver John Ross puts 2 Buffalo defenders on skates
before
waltzing into the end zone. Waltzing.
I think he beat Vontae Davis 3 separate times on that route.
Really?
Yeah.
John Ross, now I'm telling you people, exciting wide receiver. He had a bye year last year coming from Washington. One of the most exciting wide receivers for coming out of college football 2 years ago. Man, if he can do this, him and A.J. Green, ooh, Andy Dalton, shoot, his hair will be even redder. He'll be on fire.
I knew there was something over there. Lamar Jackson, he had a good game this weekend, showing off the speed.
It's from almost the exact same place on the field that he had his other electric touchdown a couple weeks ago. And we'll talk more about him later, but what was most notable about this game was what he did with his arm rather than his legs. But, I mean, he started stumbling, 10 yards away and still got in there.
Oh, he had so much momentum going on. The defensive end didn't realize Lamar Jackson was a quarterback compared to Joe Flacco. And also, he was making a return to South Florida. He had a lot of family members there, knew he'd play well.
And he had to buy tickets for them all. He said it was unlike college.
He said unlike college. I want to talk about that. It's like in college they give them to us. Okay.
Bears Chiefs.
That's what I thought.
Juice Wims diving in, keeping his feet in bounds, too.
Great throw here to the back pylon. The Bears now, don't hear a lot about the Bears. They could be one of the surprise teams in the NFC this season.
All right, either the Chiefs' defense is in trouble or the Bears' second unit is the greatest offense in league history. One of the two.
Steelers' Justin Hunter catches a really nice pass from Big Ben, manages to keep both feet inbounds in the process.
Now, if they're going to replace the productivity of Martavius, this is how they're going to do it, man. Justin Hunter has never been able to reach his potential. Drafted by Tennessee, out of Tennessee a few years ago. Did the Pittsburgh Steelers find their big play threat this weekend?
Well, he and James Washington will be fighting for snaps along with Juju and Antonio Brown. They always have talented wide receivers in Pittsburgh.
All right, moving on to Dez Bryant now. Seriously, 10 days to go before the season starts. Dez Bryant, still no job, still no team, still no uniform to call his own. He did meet with the Browns last week. We've been discussing that, but the two sides couldn't make a deal. We are now learning why. According to a report, Dez passed on an offer for less than $5 million from the Browns. That leaves him with exactly zero football options, as far as we know this morning. Chris, what do you think? Did Dez Bryant make a mistake passing on what Cleveland was going to offer?
Because it's really hard to say an individual makes a mistake as far as not signing the contract. Sign the contract. In that contract, if Cleveland was not going to allow him that if he had a monster year to make significant incentives, because at that number, if he's a starting wide receiver, you should have an incentive package in there for an established player. So I don't know what the incentive package was. I think it's right now best to be playing football. I think their quarterback situation in Cleveland has stabilized. Maybe Dez Bryant, which some current players, a lot of times, they don't know the climate of what the league is and where the team might be headed.
And they think the Browns are the worst option.
Yeah, the last couple years, like, why would he go to the Browns? Like, he's been in all the big-time games. He's played in the NFC, prime time in Dallas, and now he's off-Broadway, so to speak, what he thinks in Cleveland. So he might not think, no, I'll go somewhere else. I would go to New England or one of the other franchises for that money, but not to Cleveland. So I think being on a roster for him, not being on the roster week number one, is a mistake. So if he happens to not sign with anyone, then I will call the Cleveland contract a mistake, because if you look at Cleveland, Josh Gordon activated, but bad hamstring, tweaked his hamstring a couple days ago in practice. I believe that could have been a good fit for him to be able to make to get his career back on the right path there with Hugh Jackson.
The only way, to me, this will end up not being a mistake is if what Dez was waiting for, a wide receiver injury for a team that thinks they were contending, they are contending, which happened this weekend. Marquise Lee, it looks like, blows out his knee. It's a tough injury, and I know we'll talk about it later. If the Jags call and say, Dez, we need you, and we'll offer similar or greater money than Cleveland. Now, I'll say this. If I'm a wide receiver, I'd rather play in Cleveland this year than in Jacksonville. But if he's just worried about I think Tyrod and eventually Baker are better options than Blake Bortles. I also think you're not going to have the coverage shifted to you as much in Cleveland as Jacksonville because of the other talented receivers. I also like Todd Haley as a play caller. A lot of reasons I like that situation more. But maybe Jacksonville's going to scratch out $6 million for him. And maybe it is just a financial decision. But let's say they offered him $4 million. If you're risking $4 million to gain potentially $2 million, Like, so they offered me four. Maybe someone's offered me six.
Cleveland offered him
four. Cleveland offered him four, and he said, that's not enough. I'm waiting for a greater than $5 million a year offer. Man, I'm a gambler. I don't love laying 2 to 1 or laying 1 to 2, I should say, risking my full $4 million to hope to get $2 million more. Like, it feels risky to me.
You know, if Jacksonville doesn't offer Dez Bryant a contract, then you really have a sense of what teams think about him. And you really understand what the Cowboys were thinking when they let him go, knowing what their situation was.
It would be a statement, F Jacksonville. And it's a statement, teams like Cleveland. Baltimore offered him $7 million, multi-year. So that's basically, they were offering him $5 million. If you cut it up to a one-year deal, because you got to take some money off of it, because it's only 1 year, they're offering about $5 million. Cleveland's offered him less than $5 million. So a lot of times people think what a market's going to be, but the market is what someone would pay. As far as going to Cleveland or going to Jacksonville, as a trying to impress a team, I would try to go somewhere if I had choices to a team that I could stay with long term. So I like the concept of being in Cleveland, because what I would do is play so well that they would have to play three wide receivers. They would move Josh to the Z. They would move Jarvis to the slot,
which is where he's supposed to be.
He led the NFL as slot receiver last year, and then I would play my normal X receiver. But if you go to Jacksonville, they don't have a long-term solution at wide receiver. They don't have a big-time quarterback that they're paying a big-time contract, but they do have a big-time defense. He's going to get a lot of one-on-one coverage with Leonard Fournette banging it up on in there against eight-man front. So Jacksonville, to me, if they call, would be very, very enticing, because I would be able to stay there potentially long-term after having a good 1 year, Nick.
And if Jacksonville doesn't call, then there's no wide receiver injury that's going to make someone call. Because Jacksonville, see, what's the headline you read this weekend that made you that kind of made you chuckle a bit? Jacksonville's most established receiver seriously injured.
Yes.
And we're talking about Marquise Lee. Like, going into last year, I don't think people thought
Marquise Lee has established nothing.
Right.
I mean, seriously.
No, for like, think about it like this. Going into last year, Jacksonville had a nice receiving core before the Allen Robinson injury. But it was Allen Robinson, then Allen Hurns, then Marquise Lee. All three of their top-ranked receivers from just a year ago are gone, and the only addition is Dante Moncrief. They draft a wide receiver in the second round. We'll see if DJ Chark works out. And no other major free agent additions. Like, that is, I mean, if the Jags, who think they can win a Super Bowl, lose their number one receiver this late in the preseason and still don't call, then what scenario
and
are we talking
about when
somebody calls?
And also, let's not forget, this is a guy who's been watching Dez for his whole career in Tom Coughlin. So Tom Coughlin's played against him with the Giants and the Cowboys. So it's like a lot of times when you are a free agent, the teams most likely to get you, look at New England. Man, let someone in Buffalo the Jets,
Miami,
the Dolphins, Wes Welker, like, you watch your division so much, you have more intel, you scout them more, your scouting department knows they're in your division, so they're really up on the talent in your division.
Here's what I have a hard time understanding. The one thing I've learned from both of you, as far as this story goes, is that you are worth what the market dictates you're worth, right? So now you're saying Baltimore offered, with incentive, whatever, about $5 million.
Yes.
The Browns offered somewhere between $4 and whatever it is that much. When is he going to understand that that's it? That's where the money is going to be. And at some point with like 10 days left to go. So as a former player, how are you so out of touch with where you fit into to the rest of the league?
I learned this example from a person you might not think you would learn a lesson from. Deion Sanders taught me. He said, Chris, hey, man, everybody got their own reality, bro. He said, people think I'm crazy, but my reality, it's real to me. And Dez, in free agency, I don't know what he was trying to accomplish. I know he was shocked by his end meeting with the Dallas Cowboys, the one that Nick, his agent, told him, go in there, stand up on the table.
Absolutely. Take a hard line. Daring to cut you. I got fired as his agent shortly.
I mean, we're talking about 11 days from the opening of the season? That's your reality. Forget about what you think. It's 11 days from kicking the ball off to start the 99th season in the NFL and you don't have a team. That should speak to him more than any contract or any money amount.
And I understand the vast majority of our viewers weren't pro athletes, but I think they can all relate to this. It is hard to go backwards in salary. especially when you're not expecting it in any industry. One of some of my best friends who do radio at young age, they get big contracts like because they're radio, like huge ratings early on. And then all of a sudden the ratings come back down to earth. Hey, we want to keep you, but not only do we not want to give you a raise, but we want to have a salary correction. Man, I've seen people walk away from more money doing something they love than they can make doing anything else because they're insulted by it. You were paying me X. Now you want to pay me X minus, not X plus. That's hard for people to do. You get accustomed to something. Dez already had to realize, man, $16 million a year is gone. But he went into it, I think, thinking, I'm going to get 8 to 10. That's why he walked away from Baltimore.
Yes.
Now he's here, and I'm not even getting 5. Man, that's tough to wrap your mind around.
Yeah, and Blake Bortles potentially throwing to him.
Right.
That's worth hazard pay.
Dez Bryant's running out of time, though. All right, coming up, did Lamar Jackson prove he's a starting quarterback in the National Football League? That is next on First Things First. College football is back on Fox. Catch a full day's action as Lane Kiffin's Florida Atlantic faces the 7th-ranked Oklahoma Sooners. It all starts at 11:30 Eastern on Fox or stream it live. See on Fox, the Fox Sports app.
Young Milt, our intern, goes to FAU.
Absolutely.
Let's go, Lane Kiffin, FAU.
Awesome. Shock the world against Oklahoma.
Milt, let's do it. The team drink some milk before the game.
Mm-hmm.
Time for us to go viral. Friday night, the Big Three Championship was right here in New York, the Barclays Center. Here's how the championship was decided.
16-4 run by Three's Company to make this thing close. Here's Katina Mobley for the chip and the win. Yes! The Cat has done it! Power runs this city tonight. They're the 2018 Big Three Champions.
Nice.
Man, power has been the best team in the league all season. They only lost once. They're up 45-27, first to 50 wins. And you heard Gus say it there. They almost blew it at the end.
Yes.
Katino Mobley gets it. You guys were
great event.
Live and in
Me
person.
And some of the staff were at the Barclays Center this weekend. Tremendous Ice Cube, tremendous product. Brooklyn came out to support. Great season number 2 for the Big Three.
No doubt. It was awesome. It was really, really cool. And check out Big Baby. It's a nice moment for him, given some of the pending legal battles he's looking at.
All right, time for some stories to start your morning. Ben Roethlisberger made his preseason debut over the weekend. Looked sharp, threw for 114 yards and a touchdown against the Tennessee Titans. CeCe, what'd you make of Big Ben's performance?
It was nice. Great performance. He moved the ball around. You could see sometime Tennessee defensively was trying to take away his primary guy. So, man, he went over the field, not trying to force the ball. Ben looked like the Ben that we have gotten accustomed to seeing. Big year from Ben Roethlisberger. This guy could be representing the AFC with the collection of wide receivers that he can throw to. Should be an exciting season, Nick.
Listen, I'm very interested to see what the Steelers' offense looks like this year. We know Big Ben and Todd Haley never really got along great. Big Ben never really loved him as his offensive coordinator, even though the team was very successful. Mm-hmm. Big Ben's imprint is going to be much heavier on this offense. He's going to run much the offense he wants to than how he has the last few years. I mean, if this is any early results, you're going to be slinging around a lot. They obviously don't have Le'Veon Bell yet, but he looked great.
They'll throw it early in the season until L. Bell gets into shape, 2 or 3 games, and they'll start to mix it 50-50, run the pass.
All right, let's move on to the Colts now. Andrew Luck had his best game of the preseason, completed 8 of his 10 passes for 90 yards and a touchdown. CeCe, how encouraging was this performance by Luck?
This was his best performance yet, and it's not just because of him throwing the football and the results here. We saw him hit Ebron here on a seam pattern, tremendous throw, but his overall timing, Jenna, getting the ball out of his hand, and also being under duress. He is a freakish athlete, almost the same measurables as Cam Newton, just does it a different way. Getting sacked, being able to get out of the pocket, elude the rush there, all positive signs for the Colts moving forward for Luck week number 1. He shouldn't play week number 4.
The only non-positive sign I would say for Luck is, even though they've spent now a bunch of first-round picks on that offensive line, even in these highlights of quality plays, see the pocket getting pushed back quite a bit.
Like, yes.
They drafted Quentin Nelson, and it's way too early. I get it. But they drafted him to be an instant top 10 guard in the league and to, within a couple years, be a Pro Bowler. Like, you don't take a guard.
Zach Martin.
No. Oh, like Zach Martin. Exactly, yes. Right. You don't take a guard sixth overall if you don't think he can be Zach Martin. So that's something to watch as well. But Luck, this is his best game we've seen from him in almost 2 years.
Adrian Peterson shined in his debut in Washington, rushing for 56 yards on 11 attempts. CC, where should our expectations be with Peterson?
This was a great performance by Adrian. I think that the staff there, Gruden, did a good job. If you watch him on most of his runs, they have a fullback or a tight end. They put him in the I formation. So that's the way Adrian's run since he was a little kid running the football in Texas. So they've kind of adapted to him already. So, yes, it's hard to maintain the level that he played at on in this weekend's game. I don't expect him to be a 1,000-yard rusher. I know Adrian said the people who doubt me don't know football. Well, Adrian, I do know a little bit about football, and I do know it's hard to play football when you do get old.
Well, and look at every single one of these formations. You took it. Like, you're playing caveman football, which is fine if he is a, forget 1,000-yard, if he's a 14, if you got a 1,400-yard back, you can change your offense to suit him. Get him ball 25 times, have a fullback, and go run. But if he's not that guy, if he's 4 yards a carry or 3.8 yards a carry instead of 4.8 or 5 yards a carry, then you can't change your whole offense to suit him.
Denver didn't have a game plan to stop the run, but after a few rushes, watch how many people Denver start bringing to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
The Redskins are going to have to be able to throw the ball to be able to help Adrian out.
All right, finally, Sam Darnold continues to impress in the preseason. He threw for 86 yards and a touchdown in the third preseason game. This one against the Giants. After the game, head coach Todd Bowles said Darnold did everything he was asked to do. Nick, who should the Jets starter be week one?
In a vacuum, if excitement didn't matter, if image didn't matter, if it was just about who gives the best chance to win, the answer is Teddy Bridgewater. But all those things do matter, and they want it to be Sam Darnold. He has not given them a reason for it not to be Sam Darnold. And he did throw for 86 yards on 16 attempts. We can do that math. That's less than 5 yards an attempt. That is something we have seen in each of the three preseason games where the yards per attempt have been quite low because they are protecting him. They want to make sure that they can credibly say Sam Darnold's going to be our week one starter. And that is not an indictment on him at all. He's a rookie quarterback. He's also very young, even by rookie standards, because he started at USC so young. So for all those reasons, like, they are protecting him. And that's fine. But Coach Mangini taught me this. Coach Mangini thinks I don't listen to him. I listen to him. The owner wants him to be the starter. The coach knows that. Mm-hmm. The coordinators know that. And they are doing everything in these games to make it so they can name him week one starter and it doesn't feel like a reach. So 8 of 16, 86 yards, no touchdowns, no picks. Or one touchdown, pardon me, no picks. That's fine. Like, it's not going to move the ball downfield a lot.
Right.
But they have no reason. They have nothing invested in Teddy. They have everything invested in Sam Darnold.
Well, one thing, Coach does make a good point about organizations. Once they have committed that pick and those resources, typically you can see the decision-making will lean towards that player being given benefit of the doubt. But what I have seen is, and what I tell veteran players, players like Josh McCown or players like Teddy Bridgewater, when you're in a competition with a young player, you better make the coaches realize the difference between him and I are this much, not this much. Because in a battle for a starting position, and you've been in the league 5 to over 10 years with the two quarterbacks the Jets have, and I just got here in Sam Darnold, and I missed the first week in the contract,
you should be,
and I'm right on your heels.
Yeah.
Then it lets you know that I am the guy for the job. So I can say with the Jets, it's not just a pick. It's what the kid has shown in the hundreds of snaps in practice where Todd Bowles is a defensive coordinator and is a defensive mind, that's how he's made his living in this business. He has put Sam Darnold in very tough situations, not stuff that we've seen in the preseason, but the stuff that they've done in practice is the reason why Sam Darnold, it's not the stuff from the preseason game. Sometimes it's determined by practice. Sometimes it's determined by just the preseason games. Sometimes it's both. But in Sam Darnold's situation, he has passed all those tests, and he's close enough to these veteran players that the organization says, you know something, we are better off giving him these reps than, you know something, starting with these veteran quarterbacks, allowing them to play those first three games where our schedule is very tough. We're better off letting Sam get those experimental reps.
Right. And when he does play in those preseason games, you said it, he hasn't given them reason for them not to choose him as the week one starter.
I'll tell you something, though. Teddy Bridgewater's given a few teams, particularly one that wears also kind of a greenish color, reason to maybe call about him in Jacksonville. With the way Blake Bortles been playing this preseason, the way Teddy's been playing this preseason, I still think that is an option that they are doing themselves a disservice if they do not consider.
Colorblind, totally different greens, completely
they're
different.
Both greenish.
No, one's like a teal. Okay, well, it's fine. Not even close to
it. Whatever. Forget
like
they got that new green, family. That new green zone thing on TV.
Oh, yeah, green zone. The yellow line wasn't enough. Give me the green zone.
You need to have football players making football executive decisions with TV. Yeah.
All right, moving on to Lamar Jackson now. This is purple. Ravens fans have to be happy with what they saw from Lamar Jackson. He had his strongest performance of the preseason over the weekend. Threw for 98 yards, threw for a touchdown, ran for a touchdown, made a few catchy comments after the game. He said he hopes people now know he can throw the ball, too. CeCe, how should the Ravens use Lamar Jackson this season?
Well, you have to keep develop him as a pocket passer. He's going to get in the game and run. Like, his instincts, because every NFL game, there's opportunities for every quarterback to run. The ones who are pocket passers, they just move in the pocket and decide to get a lane and throw the football. You have to develop him as a pocket passer because his running skills, they are natural. Like, you can't develop him as a runner. There's nothing Harbaugh can teach him to run. There's nothing their offense can, hey, you know something, kid? Back when I used to be in the day, I used to have a little wiggle. No, Lamar's got things that we don't know how to do. You just have to put him in the game and try to create an environment that he can be creative. But if you don't force feed the pocket passing, he's going to scramble and run. And what we're going to see at the beginning part of his career, it's going to be hard for him to be the starter if they do it that way. So keep putting him in situations where he can throw the football. If you see him third down and 10, they drop back in the coverage, drop into the end zone. He drops it off to Devere Posey. Right here, easy first or second down throw. They got off coverage on the outside. Right here, he gets flushed out of the pocket to his left. I put the ball in my outside hand to avoid the sack. I catch a guy coming across the middle. Let him keep evolving as a player, but force him to throw the football because his natural running instincts will take over in the game, Nick.
They need to put on some Deshaun Watson tape from last year. Deshaun's not quite the electric athlete that Lamar is, obviously, but a guy who also, one of his natural inclinations was to run, and Deshaun was a devastating passer. And why was he devastating? No player in the league last year was anywhere close to as effective on play action as Deshaun Watson was with the Texans last year. They didn't have no great running back. They had Lamar Miller back there. But he was devastating on play action because of his ability also to run and what it did sinking in the linebackers. And that's where he hit deep shots and also crossing patterns. Because here, I agree with Chris entirely. Listen, stylistically, I love watching the athletic quarterbacks. You know this. And you tell me all the time, like, you don't want your quarterback running around a lot. And aside from Cam Newton, basically, every quarterback we've seen that runs around as a first instinct, it has ended poorly for them. They have had to learn. And people might say, well, what are the odds of injury? Like, let's say the odds of a quarterback getting hurt on any scramble are 5%. Over a long enough timeline, it becomes more likely than not. Like, a 5% chance, once you do it more than 15 times, it's more likely than not that at some point in that time frame, it comes in.
If the chance is 5%, Nick, that's 5% when they don't know you're going to run. When you develop the reputation as a runner all week, what they try to stop you to do is from running. So they're more aware. So a guy like Lamar and runners, it becomes maybe 15 to 20% every play, the chance of getting hurt because they know you're going to run and it's not the element of surprise.
And it's the Russian roulette analogy, which is if it only takes one time, one bad outcome to ruin everything, then it doesn't matter how good your odds are. It doesn't matter if there's 100 chambers, if every time you win gets erased by the one time you lose. And that's the concern. That's what we saw with RG3, and that's why if the Ravens, because the Ravens are going to use him in week one, I believe if they use him exclusively as wildcat runner, they're doing him a disservice. If they don't, when they put him in, if they don't allow him to throw some passes as a traditional quarterback that you get the advantage of, the defense thinks he might run, but the play is drawn up for him to pass, then I think they're doing themselves a disservice.
And Jenna, you asked me about RG3. If they're going to keep Lamar, if they're going to develop him, they need to keep RG3 because if you say if you develop him as a wildcat quarterback, you need RG3 in case he does get hurt because all that time you're spending, you don't want to spend that on one quarterback. That was the problem with Tim Tebow. He was totally different than whoever your starter was going to be. So all that time of practicing, you would lose it. So Baltimore, you're going to develop Lamar. Also keep RG3 because, man, he is almost a he's a carbon copy of Lamar if Lamar gets nicked.
I love this. Right after the draft, we were talking about whether he was even going to play quarterback, maybe receiver, how the Ravens were going to use him. There's been no talk of that. How much progress has he made to the point where we're now talking, hey, could he start at some point this season? Or we're going to keep him in the pocket? I mean, we're really just talking about him as a quarterback now.
Yeah, I think that the front office and talking to Ozzie Newsome at the Hall of Fame game, which Baltimore played in, and talking about Lamar, they love how he's progressed in the classroom. They love how he's progressed as a thrower of the football. And they were one of the teams that you didn't have to worry about that rumor at the combine. They looked at him as a quarterback, looked at him as a quarterback the whole time, and looked to develop him. Ozzie told me, Chris, he will be a starting quarterback in the NFL. That's the reason why I drafted him.
But an enormous part of him becoming a starting quarterback, and by the way, Flacco, we should give him credit. This preseason, he's played almost perfectly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they got that heat on.
So maybe that helps. But a big part of him being a starting quarterback is not once the year starts and the number one quarterback is getting the vast majority of reps in practice, is that he is not only used as a gimmick guy, that he does get to continue his progression.
Right.
Because there's a reason that he was not considered a top 10 pick. There's a reason he was into the first round, maybe second round pick, because his learning curve was going to be the steepest. You can't slow that learning once the regular season starts if he is your future starting quarterback.
All right, that's a good point. We'll take a break there. Coming up, could the Kansas City Chiefs be the best offense in the NFL this year? Could that
Heavens
sentence make
Betsy.
Nick any happier? One of the Chiefs stars thinks so. That's next. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First, former NFL head coach Eric Mangini joins us now. Always
good
a good time when
you,
you're
coach.
Here, Coach.
Good morning.
What's happening?
It's good to be back.
Yes.
Week.
Big football weekend.
This is it.
Yes.
We're down to like the last 10, 11 days, and we got ourselves a season again.
Yeah, I just can't sleep.
Up all night, stressed about it, worried about so much to analyze. So
funny,
time.
Man.
Coach Mangini on no dough.
All right, Coach.
I'm
let's
excited about this football season.
Let us.
It's gonna be fantastic.
In the history of this
let's so talk about what's happening in Kansas City.
Oh, okay, let's do that.
Last year at this time, Alex Smith was at the helm. The Chiefs had high expectations. This year, it is the Patty Mahomes era. The Chiefs are primed to do good things yet again. Mahomes went 18 for 24, 196 yards and a touchdown Saturday against the Chicago Bears. After the game, wide receiver Tyreek Hill did not temper expectations.
Well, I know that we will be the best offense in this National Football League. Without a doubt, in my head, we got the best tight end, the best running back. We got two of the best deep ball threats, receiver, Sammy Watkins addition, who can do it all. Great offensive line, so Hall of Fame coach. So the sky's the limit for us. It's up to us to put all the pieces together.
It's that kind of hyperbole that's going to make the Chiefs right there at the very end. What do you think the ceiling is for this team, Coach?
Well, I think he needs to just slow down a little bit. As exciting as the preseason.
He had talked to Nick right before that.
Is that what it
okay,
was?
Okay, yes.
Hold on, real quick. You said...
Wait, has Nick been the same way? Like,
not, well,
just
we'll,
over the top excited about the offense?
Last week,
every Chris,
year.
Did you see that long pass there? Good Lord, man, I'm telling you, Chris, this is like Montana. To Montana who? I don't know who
J.
he's going
J.
to.
J.J. Burton.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Last week, Tyreek said, me and Mahomes, he might have said, me and Mahomes can be the best deep ball combo in the league. And you said you'd have rather him said the offense as a whole can be the best in the league and bring sprinkle in with the other guys. He did exactly that. Now, you think it might be a little over the top. So, I mean.
Yeah, a little bit over the top, I think, is being kind. When you look what Alex Smith did last year, his numbers were impressive. What do you have, 28 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, 67% completion rate? He played really well.
Second in the league rating to
Second in the league rating. So to expect a young kid to come in, really starting for the first time, I know he got a little bit of experience last year, and be able to operate the same way, everybody wants to get excited about his potential and the big plays. That's great. But part of that is making good decisions, too, and not losing games. And I bring this up all the time. So, yeah, you're going to take those chances, and maybe you're going to hit a deep ball, which will be exciting for you when you're watching the game. But then when he throws the 3 interceptions or when he's taking sacks that he shouldn't.
Because that is going to happen, right, Coach?
That's definitely going to happen. He's going to go through a range of mistakes that all young quarterbacks make. And to get to the Alex Smith level, that's a pretty steep hill to climb. So I think they need to slow down.
Andy Reid, too. Andy Reid's had explosive offenses. He's had all kinds of personnel, regardless of what kind of quarterbacks he had. Old, young, developing quarterbacks. Andy Reid can do it defensively. So, Tyreek, I understand what he's saying. I get that part. I got confidence in Andy. But the last time Andy had a defense like this was his last year in Philadelphia. That defense was 29th in the league. Andy Reid got fired. They were 4-12. So we talk about their offensive personnel defensively. Pro Football Focus, run stopping, 31st rank. Because Nick will be like, man, Pro Football's Focus got my wide receiving core number 2nd. Yeah, but as a defense, man, this defense is going to
be bad.
Poor. They're going to have to score a lot of points. And when you score a lot of points, your decision-making of your quarterback, and especially a young quarterback, it's going to be stretched because he's going to have to throw the football. They can't be patient as an offense given that defense they have now.
The defense is going to be really bad. So it's a good thing they're going to score 30 points a game because they got the best weapons in the league. And my concern is in 30 points a game, I understand it's hyperbolic, but they've got everyone. Kareem Hunt won the rushing title last year. Travis Kelce.
I would think out of all categories of NFL stats, no one knows the right answer to that one more than that question. If you pose that question to people, who was the leading rusher in the NFL last year?
Kareem Hunt won the rushing title. He didn't even win Offensive Rookie of the Year somehow. He won the rushing title. Travis Kelce over the last 2 years, when you incorporate health, has been the most consistent tight end in football. Tyreek Hill has gotten We're already seeing the development from pure just straight line blazer to a guy they can use in different ways. And Watkins, that was Albert Wilson last year or Conley last year. So for all those reasons, I think the offense will be dynamic. Now, to your point, Coach, last year, what were the Chiefs? They were only best in the league at one thing. Now, they were very near the top in a lot of offensive categories. They were best in the league at one thing, fewest turnovers. They had 11 turnovers on the season, not interceptions, turnovers. That number will likely double this year as far as turnovers. Like, and so they're going to have to overcome that.
Oh, yeah.
Somehow.
They'll have 11 turnovers before Halloween.
Yeah. They're going to have a lot of turnovers. Alex Smith's biggest strength was, and some would say his biggest weakness, was the inability to take chances. Mahomes is going to be the opposite. It's going to be, like you said, some huge plays and some 3 interception games. To me, that's baked into it. I think Mahomes, the year understudy, is helpful. I think there's a reason that he's the guy they traded up in the first round to go get. Mm-hmm. And I think the early returns in the preseason, I know they're the preseason, are incredibly encouraging.
Well, when you look at Alex Smith's contribution, you see the numbers, but then it's also the decision-making in terms of the running game. We talked about the running game and Kareem Hunt. When to check to a run, when to check out of a run, when to change a run from the right hand to the left hand side. Those decisions don't show up in a stat sheet necessarily. And you can't say, okay, Alex was 80% on decision making. But now you put a young quarterback in that position and he's got to do all those things. And there's a volume of defenses he has not seen. He just hasn't seen it. So as much as we say the 3rd preseason game is a dress rehearsal, yeah, that's great. But it's a very small percentage of what you're going to get from the team that you face.
It's everything but a dress rehearsal, Coach.
Because
you're not running what you're supposed to run, and what you're going to see is not what you're going to see.
And the Bears didn't play any starters. The Chiefs were doing this. It was one of the reasons the defense was so concerning. The Bears' Chase Daniel-led offense was lighting up the Chiefs' defense. The Bears weren't playing their starters because this was their 4th preseason game because they had played in the Hall of Fame game.
Recently, I was listening to a podcast, and they were describing the difference between Patrick Mahomes and Alex Smith. Alex Smith was sort of like your steady Toyota who was going to give you exactly what you knew. And then here comes Patrick Mahomes, this Ferrari, who was just going to shine and be great and blazing, but also going to make some mistakes. He was going to stutter a little bit. We can't be surprised by that. I mean, what are reasonable expectations for a guy who played like one game last year, but who's really going to come over and take over this offense?
Yeah, well, I don't know whose podcast it is, but I want the Toyota that throws 28 touchdowns and five picks. Like, that's a pretty good Toyota. And so what does he say? He's going to be Maserati or
Ferrari.
Okay, well, so what does that mean? Is he going to throw 42 touchdowns and 10 picks or whatever it is? I just think that it's so easy to criticize Alex Smith because he's not exciting necessarily, but his numbers are really, really impressive. His decision-making is impressive. And, yeah, you get a kid with a big arm, all right, that's great. Let's see what he does, you know, day in and day out.
One other thing for the Chiefs, because last year, and this is to your point about Alex Smith, they were sixth in points. They were fifth in yards. They were second in yards per play. So they had a high-octane offense even with Alex Smith. They were 29th.
Even with Alex Smith, you act like the guy was
well, no, I think, listen,
some guy that got off the street.
No. Because I think there's a ceiling. Listen, man, I watch this team as closely as anybody can. There is a ceiling on your team when Alex Smith is your quarterback. We have seen it before. It is great in the regular season. There is a ceiling. There's a ceiling when your quarterback refuses to take chances. That's one of the reasons why they were 29th in the red zone last year. The absolute fear of can't throw a red zone pick, well, sometimes it means you can't throw a red zone touchdown. And so for as good as they were to be 29th in the red zone, that's where I think they can be better. Again, I don't think he's trash. There's a reason Washington wanted to give him that type of money. But the idea that the Chiefs can't improve at quarterback this year, that one I reject.
No, they won't improve this year. The problem about driving that Ferrari is it's going to be cool driving in the summer. But come Kansas City winners, no. He's going to be a Ferrari. It's just not going to be in 2018, Jenna. Like, he's going to be a good quarterback. It's going to take some time.
A way to listen to some podcasts, Jenna Wolf. That made
that
me
was
happy.
The takeaway of the whole segment. Jenna Wolf, coming up, I'll tell you another podcast that I listened to. There were two.
About Jenna.
Coming up, could Aaron Jenna Johnson Wolf lead the Rams to the Super Bowl? That's next on.
Jenna's watching football?
Back here on First Things First with Coach Mangini, Aaron Donald and the Rams closing in on a much-anticipated deal that would end his holdout, finally get him into camp. According to reports, the deal would make him the highest-paid defensive player in NFL history. The defensive tackle is the reigning defensive player of the year. Coach, if I say defensive one more time, it'll be a record. If Donald's there, are the Rams primed for a Super Bowl run?
Well, look at
this. Did we get a little ahead of ourselves?
Well, you might be.
Okay.
This, to me, is the most interesting storyline in the NFL because you've got a young head coach who now has there's totally different expectations. He's going
Man,
into
what
year
do you
two.
Know about that?
Yeah, I don't know
what
anything
do you,
about that.
What do you know about
being a young coach in the NFL?
Potentially maybe overachieving and then expectations change after your first year.
Expectations do change pretty quickly when you make the playoffs. Okay, so then you get into that situation where you insert a lot of guys with very strong personalities. And how is that dynamic going to play out? And I like Wade Phillips a lot, and I think he's a guy that can handle a lot of difficult personalities. But it's going to be really important for them to get off on a fast start because when things are bad and you've got challenging personalities, it can go really bad quickly. Mm-hmm. When things are good, it can go really, really good, and you get a little bit of lead time. But it changes that dramatically with the more
success.
One thing that coach is a point that I would try to emphasize even more that coach is saying, when we have gone to battle together, that means coaching staff and players, we kind of have a toughness, a togetherness that we've developed because we've been in situations that we have seen each other overcome stuff, so we have confidence in that. When you bring in the type of personalities the Rams have, and most of those guys are on one-year contracts, it becomes hard to think about the team first compared to my own well-doing and how am I playing. Forget about the team goals. If I don't play well, I'm not going to get my aspirations. And Ndamukong Suh, one-year deal. You mentioned your cornerback.
Marcus Peters.
They traded
for him. Contract, yeah.
He hadn't gotten that big money that he's expecting. Tlaib, he's there. He's supposed to be helping Marcus Peters. So they have a lot of moving parts that, as a team, if they get off to a slow start, will they be team-oriented thoughts or will they be selfish-oriented thoughts? And I do like the leadership of Wade Phillips and believed because of their schedule, this can be challenging. They are a playoff team. They are a double-digit win team. But because they don't have that, I've been through this with him together. Right. I just don't know when they hit those tough roads. How does this team, where do they go?
All right, Coach, I mean, you alluded to it. I said, Jen and I were talking this morning, and I'm glad you mentioned it, that there are some similarities between your story with the Jets and McVay. Now, I understand, like, you were the youngest coach in the league when you were hired. It was year two for you guys, but you guys way, I think, exceeded expectations.
That was year one.
Oh, year, okay, my apologies, year one. And so, and because you guys did that, then 9-7 feels like a big disappointment, right?
We struggled the next year. We were like four,
the
five.
Year three, you guys bring in. I had the years transposed. My apologies.
No, year three, we started off
8-3,
8-2 or 8-3, yeah.
And then had a bad final month of the year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But because of where expectations had been set, then all of a sudden it seems like a big disappointment, and they end up moving on. Like, I'm not at all saying Sean McVay's on the hot seat. What I am saying is, last year the guy could do no wrong. He was a wonder kid. He was this talk of the league.
Yes.
And now all of a sudden, you guys, for example, you guys brought in Favre. They brought in everybody. Mm-hmm. They paid everybody. By the way, Donald's going to be back.
Yes.
And that is a totally different situation for Sean McVay. He's no longer just not Jeff Fisher. Now he's right. Now it's about him and how that changes for him.
And we shouldn't change the expectations for Aaron Donald, because a lot of times we do. We changed it for J.J. Watt. Mm-hmm. Not justifiably, and we changed it for Ndamukong Suh. He's never going to be a regular double-digit sack guy. Like, you bring him in for a specific reason. So for Aaron Donald, those expectations, we shouldn't change them. But it's hard when you give a guy, a defensive tackle, give him $100 million. Like, and you're going to read about that every day, even though guys on the team can say they're happy for him. It's hard when you start to struggle and you get into that NFL life and trying to win games and what becomes important, Coach.
Yeah, and everybody, things change with success. And we've talked about this before, is you have to learn how to deal with success, just like you have to learn to deal with adversity. And for Sean McVay, the owner looks at it differently, the GM looks at it differently, the rest of the league looks at it differently, the team looks at it differently, all these guys that come in, it's the same thing. Now, that doesn't mean they're not going to struggle. And if they struggle, how are people going to respond? And they didn't have a ton of adversity last year, mm-hmm. So it's going to be interesting to see how he responds, the coaching staff responds, and that can go one of two ways. And the more volatile people that you have in the locker room, when it's difficult, it's easy to set that off.
What advice would you give a guy like Sean McVay right now, who seemingly is on top of it all and has it all?
Well, I think the most important thing for him is to do the things that he believes in, to stay with the philosophy that he believes in, because when adversity strikes, there's always this temptation to stray from what you believe in. And then the group looks at you and says, "But wait a second, that was good enough. Mm-hmm. That's what you told us you believed in, and now you believe in something totally different, and it doesn't resonate." You got to be able to get through the turbulence, get through difficult times, and come out on the other side with your core beliefs.
I think one advantage that Sean has is the people who he's working with. Stan Kroenke, the owner, I mean, he's got plenty of money. He's owned several sports teams, so he understands the patience that it takes to try to win a championship. And Les Snead is there as the general manager. They are going together. Him and Sean McVay are kind of going about this. So even regardless of what the results are on the field, to make sure that they stay on the same page with Stan Kroenke as the owner and with the general manager moving forward to build this monster of a team, not for one season, but for a period of years.
And there's got to be a level of patience. He's in his second year. He's learning as he goes, too. He's going to be a different coach in year three and year four. But this is something that he's got to experience as well.
I want to go back to Aaron Donald real quick before we move on, because I think everyone at the table agrees he's either the best defensive player in football or on the very short list. I also know that from talking football with you, that you look at things, cap considerations involved. We've talked about trades you made and saving the team. This, like, in a hard cap league, this matters. As good as Aaron Donald is, Would you have any qualms about giving more than 10% of your cap space, which is what this is reported at, $22 million a year? Forget the guarantees. $22 million a year for an interior defensive lineman. Would that worry you?
Well, if you feel like he's one, not just your best player, but he's one of your best people and he's a leader and he's going to respond to this contract in the right way, then you pay what the market dictates you have to pay. And the salary cap's going to go up and the deal will change as the years go on. But if he's a true cornerstone of your team and he's someone that you fundamentally believe in as a person and as a leader, then I'm all for it. I think that those are the people that you pay, and you let everybody around look at that person and say, okay, that's who I want to emulate.
He is that. Aaron Donald is that guy. He's that guy going to be early to work. Last year, he showed you that in the holdout. His productivity did not suffer, followed it up with the MVP season. So if the Rams, based on coach's philosophy, Aaron Donald's the guy you want to be able to make that investment in.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.